And then he had to be like, oh, excuse me. And I'm like, oh, my God, hey, huge fan. And he's like, hey, I'm about to go outside and smoke the spliff. Like, want to join?
No way.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. I'm not believing this anymore.
That's crazy.
All
right?
Of this, no.
And I said no because I was so nervous.
You said no to smoking a J with Seth Rogen, the guy that you found super hot.
My cousin was freaking out. She's like, go, go, go.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, yeah, I'll see you out there or whatever. And then I just never went. I went to the bathroom and thought I was going to like puke and have diarrhea. And so I just never went.
So you...
But I spoke to him.
That's amazing.
I spoke to him and he kind of bumped into me and grazed my thigh.
I'm just saying it happened. Wow.
So, yeah, super fun. I'm ready.
Jess.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. It's like we just said hi 10 minutes ago.
I know.
Now we have to pretend like we're saying hi randomly.
Yeah, and
right
now all of a sudden I'm all like... shoulders hunched in.
You're stressing out.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You should have had a drink or something then before.
Oh, God. Yeah. Story of my life. I'm planning on going on the sober train, but I've also been saying that for the past like fucking 10 years. Sorry. Are we swearing?
You can say whatever you want here. So, yeah. No, but, you know, one, how are you? Because I remember I saw some stuff that it didn't go so well on a ski hill. And then you were talking to me about even a bit of an injury lately. So what happened?
Well, Steph.
Actually, can we put the mic just a bit
lower? Lower, yes.
Yeah, and we'll lift it up so that way we can get perfect.
Beautiful.
Awesome.
Face. I do a lot of dumb shit. So that's what happened. But no, I posted the Instagram video of what had happened, and I wasn't really on a ski hill. I mean, I tell people it was a skiing accident just because
it cooler.
Sounds nice. But I was literally the equivalent of a steep driveway.
Okay, so how did a steep driveway turn into like multiple stitches?
At a cottage, at my buddy's cottage up north, we were all going skiing / tobogganing / crazy carpeting. I don't know what, there were these foam boards. You could, I'm sure, use them on the water or on the snow. They go fast. And it was that weekend where we were having a bunch of fresh snow.
Oh, it's like that beautiful, like,
I don't know. I don't think it hit in Montreal like it did up north, but we had like 30, like we were snowed in.
Okay.
So it was a snow day. And, you know, I had a mimosa or two, naturally.
Three, four, seven.
I'm always the girl that brings the bottle of cava and like freshly squeezed some juice.
Yeah.
So I had a couple of those, but that's just like naturally. And we all went, you know, boogie boarding.
Whose idea was it? Because there's always...
My buddy Jayham.
I was going to say, there's always that one guy that says, or one girl that's like... You know what? Crazy carpet. We just had like 10 drinks. Let's go out and do some.
Yeah. I mean, it was morning. It was brunch. Honestly, we're not as wild as these are my friends and have been my friends for the past decade, literally. And we're so tame now. So us being like, let's try and go outside and enjoy the snow.
Yeah.
We're all in our mid-30s.
Everyone's awkward. Yeah. Everyone's awkward about nature.
Did anyone bring snow pants?
Yeah.
So we all went to try and enjoy the day, and I was like, had my little mini booties on with like a 3-inch heel, the ones I wore here, which I probably shouldn't be wearing because my knees split open. I decided I'm going to go down on my feet and like surf this thing down
Sounds
the
like
hill.
A great idea.
And you see the video and it's looking fine. And as someone who's been skiing since I was 8.
Okay. So it's not some rat, like you never ski or anything. So you just had like that confidence.
I was just
I'm a
like,
skier,
yeah, let's
I could do this.
I can do it. Anyone can do it. It's just eventually you're going to fall. And it's all about how you fall.
Yeah.
There's like a way to fall where you don't injure yourself.
Yeah.
And so I thought I had that down packed and I didn't. Except in the video, it looks like I'm fine. And as I fell, I felt fine. I just felt like, oh shit, I really like landed on my knee there. And everyone's like, are you okay? Like, I heard something from, like, way up here.
When someone hears something,
you
know there's something
that's
fucked
snow,
up. Yeah.
It's muffled. So for them to hear my
loud.
Knee from up there, and I was like, yeah, I'm fine. It was just, like, when you hit a funny bone, you know, it's that weird sensation of, like, oh, shit. But I went back up and went down, like, two more times.
Oh, so like you continued after?
Yeah. I just thought I'd hit my knee.
What happened
and
to
then
you?
I had my boyfriend come running down the hill being like, Jess, there's like blood like all in the snow.
Wait,
are
shit.
You okay?
Oh, shit.
And that's when I started to feel like a cold, wet sensation all down my leg.
Oh, man.
And I looked down and I saw that a friend of mine's like North Face freaking snow pants were completely just gashed through with blood coming out.
Oh my God.
And the first thing I thought was, ooh, I just ripped this bitch's snow pants.
Looks like I need to pay dry cleaning.
Blood all over it. So that's my thought. Is like, I can't afford to buy her new ones.
You just leave. You don't come back. Yeah.
So I went inside and took the snow pants off. And that's when I realized that my pants were just soaked through in blood, like holy soaked shit. Through. So then I sat down on the toilet, and you know, in the bathroom.
Pass out with all the blood loss.
No, so this is when I got nervous.
Okay.
And I got nervous when you know, everyone was like, just like, take your pants off. Like, let's see.
And this is the only time you didn't enjoy hearing that. You're like,
yeah, usually.
Usually you're like, hey, okay. This is like, oh shit.
That's when I got nervous and my hands started shaking a little bit because I knew what I was going to see wasn't just a little boo-boo. It was going to be
bad. When shit leaves a trail, it's not a boo-boo.
Shit leaves a trail. Yeah, so I didn't take my pants off, but I pulled my pant leg up.
We're going to do the editing. You know, I took my pants off. We just only keep certain parts.
And yeah, there was a huge gash, this big across my kneecap, where I could just see like the inside of my body and everything that were makes the inside of a knee.
What were you thinking at that point?
I was thinking immediately like, wow, the pain I'm feeling isn't matching the graphicness and violence of what my eyeballs are seeing.
Isn't that crazy?
Insane.
Okay. So you weren't feeling it. And
I've had period cramps worse.
But that's what I was going to say. But what happened the moment you saw it now? Like, did everything kind of switch? Like, all of a sudden you felt more pain? Like, No? What happened?
I was just, like, in fucking shock. I was like, wow, I've never seen the inside of my body like this. I mean, you know, we all get creative when we're naked and, like, you know, bend over and look at stuff, you know?
I love it. I have this image now, you know, with like some GoPro in this weird contortionist direction. And you're like, oh, that's there. I didn't know that. Nice to meet you.
So it was crazy because I saw like my kneecap, you know, that little floating piece of bone.
But now you're snowed in. What did you do?
So my buddy of mine, we went to the pharmacy because I thought, I can just put a Band-Aid on this, right?
Hey, this is my knee. What do we need? Just Band-Aid.
Yeah. So, and I had other friends of mine that's like, oh, my daughter, she split her chit open. There's like these special Band-Aids that are almost like stitches where you close it and it's Band-Aid stitches.
Okay.
So I went to the pharmacy, everything closed at 5:00 and it's up north. So everything's taking like a really fucking long time to go around. We're in Santa Gath at this point, and 20 minutes before a pharmacy closes, this woman's like, listen, a Band-Aid's not going to cut it. You need to go to the hospital.
I don't want to burst your bubble, but this fucking Band-Aid is not enough.
Yeah, so we have to go to the Santa Gath emergency room.
Oh, yeah, I saw it. I think you had posted something with someone in the emergency room.
Yeah, it was just a shit show, really. And fun day. We were there till 1 a.m.
Yeah, for sure. Like, so you're not leaving early.
We left at 4:00, so from 4:00 to 1:00 in the morning. Just literally to see a doctor to stitch me up, which took 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well, I remember once, you know what you were saying about like you don't realize like the actual like pain you should be in probably
is
from
it like
the
DMT or something that your body releases, sort of anti-pain.
I got a fucking puck to the head once. Like I had a scar open up in my head.
Did you get a concussion?
Yeah. Oh my God.
What does that feel like?
Oh, that was the best.
It
was like the coolest trip ever. And I remember, and it was such a fucking stupid way. Like, I wish it was cool. Like, I wish, you know, you're saying, like, you wish you had a cool story. I was like coaching this team that I don't even know how to coach. I got put in a situation where I didn't really, like, I shouldn't have been. I was covering for a friend that didn't show up. He asked me to come and help him, and he doesn't show up. So I'm like pretending to coach these kids that are like bound to make the NHL, and I've never coached hockey in my life. They're all like these
good old substitute teacher.
Yeah, good old substitute teacher, like lost. I'm behind this bench. My French is terrible especially when it comes to hockey plays and shit like this. And so I'm just tapping like guys on the shoulder, like, okay, you go, whatever. Like, I'm trying to organize all this stuff. They're playing, and then I'm looking down at the board. And boom, a puck hits me in the fucking
Jesus.
Head. Like, I didn't even realize what happened. And all of a sudden, like, the room just went you know, when you just don't hear anything anymore?
Yeah.
I'll never forget, because remember, I look at this kid because I don't realize that my head is open. Like, it's my forehead here. It's open.
Oh, my God.
And there's blood everywhere on this shirt that I'm wearing, all blood everywhere. And I just see this kid, and I swear to God, all I heard was, Dabarnak. You know? And he's literally looking at him like, oh, my God. And then I just put my hand on my face, and blood everywhere.
Oh, my.
It was so God. Intense. It was so intense, but I didn't even realize it. And then the trainer looks at me, and he's like, you know, are you feeling warm? Are you feeling hot? And I'm like, no, dude, I'm fucking on the ice. I'm frozen, actually. And he goes,
like,
tell
let's
me.
Go. Let's finish this yeah. day.
Yeah, I got to finish this day. And he's like, tell me when you feel hot. So I'm like, okay. I didn't expect that question.
What? So you're waiting now?
So you're waiting. And then he goes, yeah, tell me, like, give me like a heads up before. I'm like, okay. So all of a sudden, as we're walking,
yeah.
my body just, whew, it is on fire. And I look at him, and whoa. I think his name was Alex. I'm like, Alex, I'm like, yo,
it's hot.
It's hot. He goes, okay, you're going to pass out right now. Don't worry. I'm like, what? Out.
Whoa.
Yeah, I had to go. They brought
but you
me.
Should have been sitting down already.
Well, they were trying to transfer me off the ice, right? Because oh, I have to get
okay,
out
so
to
this
go
happened
off.
Quickly.
This,
okay.
Yeah, yeah, this happened. No, it wasn't like
I thought
continued.
It was just
no,
like,
we didn't
all
finish
right,
playing
so
the game.
Your
no.
head split open. Tell me when so, you feel weird.
Anyways, it was so crazy. That's why when you're saying like those injuries, you don't know. Like in that moment, you're like, it can't be that bad. And then all of a sudden, when I saw myself at the hospital, it was this fucking like seven yeah. stitches on my head. It was a mess.
Because I've always pictured myself. It's not that I fantasized about this, but you always think like,
me,
oh God.
Tell me more about your fantasies.
If ever I injure myself publicly, I always thought to myself like, man, I'm going to look like a bitch. Like I'm going to be crying. Oh, okay. I'm going to be just like.
You went down two more times. So that's pretty cool actually. Then.
But in reality, your body has this self-defense mechanism where it just shuts that pain receptor off and yeah. it's. Really cool, because otherwise
I would have
been crying.
So now after we talk about all these injuries, you yes. actually write music. It has nothing to do with this. So,
yes, injuries aside, I do many other things besides
I was gonna say, that's
hurt
one.
Myself.
Well, I saw something that's coming out, I think, like, I don't know when we're going to release this podcast. Mm-hmm. It's been like a bunch of shit that kind of slowed the process down. So I don't know when we're mm-hmm. going to release this, but I saw that you're releasing something January 26th.
Yes.
And it's like an EP or it's a single?
So it's out, guys.
Oh, it's out? Okay, it's officially out?
Well, by the time people
yeah,
see
exactly.
this, it will be out. Yeah, I just released, as of January 26th, Friday, a single called Undertones. Yeah. It's something I've been working on for many, 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 many years. I have a very slow creative process.
It's a single or it's an EP?
So the EP will be called Diary of a Flame.
Okay. Because I saw you like with all this fire yeah. stuff and hand on fire. So and I was like, okay, I wasn't sure what yeah. if it was EP or.
Yeah. So it'll be the single off the EP. Okay. The EP will be out late February. So.
Yeah. Well, it should we'll work. See. It should work.
But yeah, I'm super stoked about it. I'm really happy with how the visuals turned out. I really want to give a shout out to a friend of mine, Sean Mundy. He's blowing up right now, actually. He just worked with 21 Savage.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. He is a pyromaniac. No, probably not. But
there was that one guy that likes to light shit on fire.
Yeah.
They just like seeing shit burn. Something in them. You see their eyes. They sparkle. Like they're so
really
happy.
Really cool graphic designer. Actually, I don't know if I'm labeling him. He's a wicked artist. Yeah. Let's just put it that way. Multifaceted artist. I'm super lucky to be surrounded. I mean, we both are so lucky to be surrounded by so much talent. This city is just so saturated with amazing talent.
Really good artists. And like in so many different fields.
Yeah, so I worked with him and he lit my arm on fire and that was cool. And
what were you thinking when he, okay, who pitched the idea?
Me.
Okay.
Well, he pitched me what he had in mind as a concept,
okay.
but I went to him specifically looking for him to set me on fire in some way.
Keep going. I don't even know what question to
so
ask.
So I'm like, okay, people are releasing really cool visuals. And as I mentioned, Montreal's just so saturated with talent. Who's lighting themselves on fire?
Just Google that shit.
Not many people that I know of. So I was like, okay, that'll look cool.
Yeah.
And like, you know, with the fiery, curly red hair, it's yeah. just like a whole red, flamey thing. And yeah, so we did that. And looking sick. I'm happy with it. And so if I'm happy yeah. with it, then, I mean, I don't really care what anyone else thinks.
Isn't that funny? Like, was, you know, because I saw you did a lot of stuff. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like I did a quick, like, read and, you know, at least who the hell am I talking to, right? But, like, from being on TV, mm-hmm. from being, you know, writing music for a while, I think there was also film in there somewhere or some sort of film, being involved with TV. And, like, there's a bunch of stuff that you've done. And have you always had that feeling of like you didn't care, or is that something recent now that you started realizing like I'm doing this for me?
Oh, that comes with age. Yeah.
Okay.
That comes as of last week.
Yeah. I was about to say, it's like you're so worried about all the time what people are thinking. I'm like, and I noticed that as you get older, you kind of like let go of that. So I'm yeah. curious, like, when did you start finally?
Last week.
Like no. For real, like this morning.
No. No, I think just that magic 30 number hit huh? and you just start realizing, I don't know, you start getting grounded a little bit, which is a good thing and a bad thing in my case, just because I've had my head in the clouds and living in cloud nine and in Narnia for most of my life, just okay. like total fantasy land, which is what's helped me be so creative and mm-hmm. successful in like the little things I've wanted to do in life, all the projects I've done. But yeah, you get grounded a little later on in life and have different priorities and different goals. And yeah, you just start doing things for you. Whereas mm. when I was younger, it was like, how can I make it, whatever it is? Yeah.
I love
how
that word. Isn't it such a great...
Whatever successful means or success yeah. means to you. I guess just like chasing happiness for such a long time. But that happiness goal was also attached with, how do I get myself noticed? How do I get approval? How do I get all of this stuff? How do I get people to like me or think that I'm good or talented? And yeah, that all kind of just stops after a while. Just because you start realizing, okay, you end up doing something that yeah. you're not necessarily really in love with. And then you kind of get lost and realize that you're doing it for someone else. Yeah. And then it doesn't become fun anymore.
When do you remember like certain times that you can clearly think of? Like, I know certain times for me that I realize, I'm like, why yeah, did we even do this? Like,
definitely.
And I remember those times every time I'm about to, like, maybe do that again. And then I think of that feeling. I'm like, oh, I don't want that feeling mm-mm, again. Mm-mm. So, like, when was it, like those last few times that made you? Well, what were the feelings you kind of got those last few times when you did that?
It's been a while, but there's one clear moment in my life a few years back. I've been through like just so many agents, mismanagement, agencies, all that stuff. Mm. I'm like, for the past few years now, I've been solely independent, which comes with its own hurdles, obviously, yeah. but really feels way better than having someone, you know, with their hands in your pockets, physically and metaphorically speaking. but yeah, there was this one time I remember really clearly, and I think I've told this story before. Where I was actually working with my buddy Stephen Voice and
shout out to Stephen. We're yeah, listening to him to right before.
We were just listening to you before. I don't know which camera to look at, but yeah, I'm gonna leave this person unnamed. They've yeah. been blacklisted and me too'd since then. But okay. we were working with this agent, and Steve and I were releasing a single called Molly, which I'm so in love with. It's one of my favorite songs. We released this double single called Molly and Sour Cherry, and they have this bossa nova-y pop yeah. jazz feel to it. Love it. So we were shooting cover art for that and like marketing and press materials around that single. And I remember I was in his big studio, and he had like the makeup artists and the wardrobe and stylist and everything there. Like, this guy really liked to make a show of,
like, it was an event.
Yeah, this. Like yeah. he was a big shot.
Yeah,
and he wanted us to know yeah, that he was a big shot.
Yeah, it's the ego that's really popping in, right?
Totally unnecessary, but yeah. So he had his whole team there, and he took one good look at me, and he's like, "Yeah, Jess, curly hair is not marketable, so we're gonna get rid of that today, right quick."
No way.
So he had me in a chair for like 2.5 hours and had this poor woman straightening my curls out like flat, and then put me in a red corporate Republican pantsuit with this see-through. It looked like I was wearing a garbage bag or a recycling bag
what
underneath.
What the fuck?
And he was just like, yeah, sexy. And had me in these like red high heel stilettos. Literally, there's outtakes of me walking around like I can't walk in heels.
Yeah.
You know, Jess Abram doesn't walk in heels.
If you know this, if you know me.
Clearly, I was wearing boot heels, snowboarding down the hill. You wore heels in the wrong time, though. And bailed. Yeah, so I'll always remember that. And now on Spotify and all online streaming stores forever more, there's a picture of me and Steve looking great, and me beside him looking like not me. Mm. Literally, you would never be able to tell that's Jesse. I look I like if right. I had a long lost sister.
Because I was listening to some of the tracks, I remember, and there was one track that I have to ask you a question about the snare. I love the fucking snare on one of the songs. Ooh. But I remember that cover. It's a kind of like a teal or whatever background. Mm. And I think like the two of you are there. And I was like, oh. And not in a bad way, but I was like, oh, that's different. Like maybe she just tried like a different look.
Yeah.
So how do you like now you see this?
Mm-hmm.
Does it hurt or motivate, I guess, when you see that picture? Like what are kind of like the thoughts that go on your mind when you
it
see that
hurts
picture?
Hurts me that I was like that I went along with it, mm-hmm. and didn't have a backbone to even give him other options. Because
mm-hmm.
I was just like, yes, okay, you're the guy with the money. You're making this happen for me, so yeah. I won't say a word. When really, like, off camera, I was like with Steve the whole time, like, what the fuck are they doing to me?
Yeah.
And none of us said anything.
Yeah.
And that's – I mean, we could go so deep into how many times and how many situations we could have said a thing that we should have said – and retroactively, but now I use it as a motivating factor of just like I'm never gonna let anyone ever do that again. Like I know who I am, I know how I want to be represented. I'm not gonna let some guy or some gal with deep pockets determine what I'm gonna wear or what I'm gonna look like or what my music's gonna sound like. I'm just really, really done with that. Like I've been through it all, really. So, yeah, no more.
And now when you're making decisions, like this new EP, right, and you look super excited, you look super happy about, like, the artistic work, is it also kind of like an EP where you see this new music coming out, but kind of almost like a growth from your side, a new you towards how you want to walk into?
Yeah, most
like
of
music
these.
Music and just these, creativity?
Yeah, most of these tracks were written during the pandemic. And during the pandemic, before that, I was so busy doing another thing in another avenue of my career. Like, I was in and out of California all the time, like all throughout 2018, 2019.
Why?
I was working with Warner Brothers and this crowdfunding company from France called Ulule. I think they're bankrupt now. Their headquarters in Montreal don't exist anymore, I don't think. But I was their head director of all content.
Oh, shit.
I'd never been in a position of that caliber before. Yeah.
Were you buzzing?
So I was faking it, as we all do to a certain extent.
I was about to say that, yeah.
But I am an uneducated person in a traditional sense.
Yeah.
Just never, school was never really for me. I've always just been like a working musician my whole life until I discovered that I could do other things in media and in entertainment.
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation I'd love to have with you.
Yeah. So for them to just give me this position, I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Pinching. And then, by the way, we're sending you off to California.
We have a big pinching.
Yeah, we have a big partner with Warner Brothers and Bank of the West in California. Like, they're funding our initiatives. So you go ahead and you do that. And I was like a one woman show. I don't know how I veered off into that topic, but essentially I had not picked up my guitar. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm going with this, in over a year. So during the pandemic, I was nearing the end of like a 10-year relationship with ex, and we had been living together for also like 9 years of that time.
That's a lot of change then.
Yeah. It was like a moment of a lot of change. I had lost my dream job in California.
Why? It's like, whenever you hear these stories, it's like you hear everything crashing always at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, there's the relation. No, but and in one way, it's kind of like it almost needs to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. In my case, it worked out for the better. Do you, like, you've been through it now, so you have your story. So I'm wondering, like, all these things are happening. How the fuck you kind of escaped back to music because of all that?
I literally dusted off my guitar. Like, not metaphorically speaking, like, like it had a thick layer.
I grabbed a Swiffer.
Yeah. Yeah. One of those Swiffer duster things. Yeah. I like dusted off my Norman guitar, tuned her up, changed the strings, and then just started playing again. And it had been like a year and a half since it. Since I literally picked up my guitar, which, oh, I'm so sorry, Norman. Poor baby. My baby.
And so how did, like, so what, okay, I like hearing that kind of, like, those types of stories in the sense of what triggered you to finally, after a year and a half, say, I'm going to pick up this guitar?
Well, I lost my dream job. Okay. And me and my boyfriend at the time were literally, like, essentially living in separate rooms. Mm. So I had my, what I called my jam room, my studio room, and slash guest room with no bed in it. just started isolating myself in there, feeling sorry for myself, which is one of my favorite things to do.
So great.
As an artist.
It's so fun.
I'm sure we all relate. Yeah,
if you ever were an artist, there's nothing better than feeling like shit.
Yes.
In what
it's dangerous so because I just revel in it. I just roll around in it.
And then you kind of like you almost like, without this, what am I gonna write about?
Exactly.
It's almost like it's being toxic. Happy. Yeah, it's such a weird thing. I totally understand what you're saying.
But it's like I get really comfortable in that feeling of like, I get so comfortable in that feeling, so much so, and this is another topic we could dive into a whole other podcast, but happiness is so fleeting that whenever I feel it come into my body, it's almost like an episode of mania because I'm like, oh my God, I'm happy, I'm happy. Mm-hmm. And then I focus on that feeling of happiness and then I'm like, oh fuck, it's going to go away. It's going to go away. Mm-hmm. How long is it going to last? I should not think about happiness. I should just be present in the moment of happiness. And then it always just goes away. And then you're like, of course it went away. Mm. I'm just born to be this massive cloud of dread.
Yeah.
And then you get comfortable in that, like, oh, well, of course this is happening to me. Like, poor me. Yeah, I'm just fucking doomed. Of course I'm doomed to feel this way for the rest of my life. But that's where most of my creativity comes from, is that, like, damp blanket. But now, as you get older, you learn to manage that in much healthier ways.
Yeah. Drinking.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I know when to like switch it off. Or like you know how to recognize, okay, yeah, I'm feeling this way. Drink a celery juice.
That's so 30s.
Or communicate.
That's you know.
Now I brought a celery juice with me here today.
But okay, so, but you know, you're saying stuff that I think, you know, even for me, I remember, like, I actually, when I'm in my shittiest times, is when I finally get some sort of clarity. When I'm at, like, the worst at the lowest, it's like, I just need a little win right now. Like, and I need this little win. I don't need anything else. I just need this fucking, like, one little thing to
and
go
And it
right.
always comes.
And it comes because you finally. It's that little, like, blimp. And I find it's kind of, because you kind of finally start, like, looking for the win. Whereas, like you were saying before, you kind of always like, I told you it wasn't going to work or whatever it is, right? So, like, did you feel like that with the guitar? Like, when you finally picked it back up and you're like, and you started playing with it again, did you feel like a bit of a win? And that's what kind of brought you back in?
Steph, these are really good questions. Sorry, I just had a bird's eye view of myself in this podcast right now. And just a sidebar, you're really good at asking questions.
I know. Thank you. I'm so good. I'm so good. Chris, I'm so good.
But yeah, because you're really triggering like memories.
Okay, good. I trigger people. I'm happy. Thank you.
And
but in a good way, hopefully.
Yes. No. Of course. You're bringing me back. Yes. So I remember picking up the guitar, and I remember just strumming chords I had never strung before. I've always had a hard time with lyrics, never with melody. I'm a melody queen. I'm a hook queen. I'm good at that. But finding lyrics that are meaningful, have depth, and make some sort of metaphorical sense, I've always had a hard time. And it just really started flowing out of me.
Yeah.
And it was just song after song after song. And I used to call them like my little acoustic scratch tracks because I didn't want to give them that much meaning yet because I was super insecure. I'm like, oh, they're just little audio diaries, my little scratch tracks, my little notebook. They don't mean anything. And then I started building and building and building on them. And then lo and behold, it's, oh my God, it's like 2024. And I finally have the means to get them done.
Yeah.
Which as a musician, you know, is just a huge process because you have to go into the studio, get them recorded, and then go and get them mixed. And you got
to
find the right guy to mix them and not butcher them.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all been down the path of having someone not mix your tracks right and it just being like, this is not the vibe.
But why is it that, perfect example. I remember the first time we made an EP and it was terrible, you know, like not, there was one that we did that we really like were happy with Dave actually a long time ago. That one was amazing. And that's how we kind of became friends. And it was like, when you find the person that you can like, especially at the time, like that we were so into music and you find this person you trust with your song, it's like, you really like, you become like brothers or whatever, you know, family, whatever you want to call it.
I'm gonna hold on to you.
Yeah, yeah, I need you.
You're
here
not
more,
going anywhere.
Because we're going to write more music and we all know how to write together. And it's kind of like this connection that happens. But when it doesn't connect and you listen back to the song and you're like, oh my God, the song sounds like fucking shit.
What did you do?
It feels like it's butchered. It's like the levels are all wrong.
Yeah.
It's just like you feel weird.
Yeah.
Even listen, you hear your song and it's not the song you wrote. It's such a weird feeling.
I've broken down and cried from horrible mixes that cost so much money too.
I know.
I've honestly learned throughout the years that if you want something done half the time, you just do it yourself and figure it out. Like with cover, like photo shoots and cover art and stuff. Like I would have hired a guy for this EP. It would have cost me hundreds. Easy. And in the end, my boyfriend took out his cell phone, some Android Samsung phone.
Isn't it crazy?
I have a black backdrop at home and I edited that the way and there you go. Album art done. Free.
And you know what's crazy?
And no one cares.
You realize that there wasn't a difference. One. There's times where you could really see it. Like when someone does it really well, you see the difference.
Yes.
But the basic, like most people are not great. So you're kind of like looking okay this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
You pay for it and it's not looking good. But then you realize when you do it yourself, I find you actually like it more. Like the stuff that we make, Chris and I, like it's a home shop, right? The whole show, it's a home fucking shop. Everything about it. But we enjoy it. Like it's our shit. Even if it's shitty, it's my shit.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not someone else.
At least it's not someone else's shit. Someone else's shit that
with my face on it. You know what I mean? So it's like, at least it's my stink. I'll make it myself, you know? And there's something about it. And then I find there comes a point where you realize like, okay, this is the furthest I can go on my own now.
Yeah.
And now I know what I don't want and I know what I do want.
Yes.
And you're the right person to bring me to another level. Like I find it's like, that's the progression. I don't know if you feel that same way now.
Definitely. Or... Yeah. When you find your people who best represent you or are able to make you shine in your mixes or the mastering. I went to Freck Shop and Dave for the mastering.
Dave's awesome.
And he took my direction super, super well. And he made it shine. So I'm super, super stoked.
One thing, like just like on a side note for Dave, what I always loved about Dave is that his band's doing really well. Like, they're everywhere and he could leverage all this stuff. And he does, like you talk to him and you wouldn't even know. Like he loves like helping the musician.
I love him.
Find their sound, you know, like he helps them like figure things out on their own.
Yeah.
And then he kind of like says, okay, now that we know what it's like, let's do it. But he'll suggest something and he suggests something in a way where it doesn't feel like it's hurting the song. Like you're like, let's try it. It actually sounds like a good suggestion to it or whatever. And you don't feel like he's trying to take over the song or anything like that. So I remember even this was a long time ago when we worked together and it was like that like 20 years ago. So, and all I've heard is always that same, he's always been that for the last 20 years.
Yeah. Him and Derek. It's also great when you find people to work with where they can take direction without taking it personally either.
He has none of that.
Like, man, I've worked with some people who have such strong egos and believe in what their thing is so strongly that when you suggest an edit, they're like, well, you know, they just get a little offended.
Yeah.
And in the end, it's like,
hey, they take it personal.
It's kind of my project.
Last I remember, it's my name on it.
So I found the dream team in terms of, of that, which is always really nice.
But when you were like thinking now back and you kind of, we triggered some stuff. How did it all start in the first place? Like, what made you want to get into music? Because you do a lot of stuff, but like, there was music seemed to like.
I didn't always.
No, it sounded like when I was reading like whatever, like so, a bit of a short bio. It's like a long history of music, though.
Crazy resume now, but it's the typical scenario of like jack of all trades, master of none. Mm-hmm. For the longest time, it was really only just music.
Okay,
got my first guitar at the age of 12. Discovered, you know, Pantera, Slayer, Metallica, Sex Pistols, Rancid, NoFX. That was my jam back then.
Yeah.
Typical rebellious teenager, dyed my hair black and blue.
You opened the book. Hello, which bands are you?
So those, I was very like anti-authority and all that shit, you know? Graffitiing under the bridge, listening to the Chili Peppers.
Yeah, and you think you're in a video. Yeah. You think you're in. I used to picture myself being in videos all the time. I used to have like I always just say like I felt like life was like a soundtrack in a sense. Like I always needed a soundtrack, and I'd be walking around thinking like I would hear this song and I'd be like, oh man, I would look so cool in this video right now.
I was for
this
song. Definitely the main character. Yeah, definitely. Of my story. Oh, yeah.
Big time.
I was very just. Talk about wallowing in your own sorrow. Like, but
it was so fun. It was so fun.
Yeah.
I had such a great time being the dick.
Same. I was such a horrible little teenager. We could get into childhood traumas and stuff. But I was a bit of a dick to the point where one Christmas, my mom got a little saucy and told us kids at the table, like, oh, I would do you kids all over again if I could. I swear you guys were so great. Except for you, Jessica.
Well, okay, my mom
was. I was apparently just a terror.
Same. Okay, my brothers were like angels, and then I showed up. And then, you know, and then it fucked
so
shit
you were
up.
The baby?
Yeah, I was a baby.
Okay, I was the eldest.
You were the eldest? Yeah. That's weird.
Yeah, I know. No one would ever think.
I would have thought you were the baby in the story for sure.
Yeah, I sure act like it.
Mm-hmm. I can confirm I was the baby. And I remember my mom caught me smoking when I was like 12 years old.
Mm,
yes. She freaked out. And obviously she's like, promise me you're not going to smoke. Promise me. Like,
my heart.
And I'm like, I promise. And I'm like, as I'm promising, I know I'm going outside for a cigarette. Like, yeah. I was like totally lying to my mom's face. And then she looked at me after, like, she had given me a bunch of shit. Like, she wasn't just crying. She told me off all this stuff.
Wow.
And she's like, when you're 18, you do whatever the fuck you want to do. I don't care. You want to smoke your head off. It's always those weird lines. Smoke your head off. I'm like, okay, whatever. On my 18th birthday, on the cake, I took out my cigarettes. And I took out a cigarette and I lit a cigarette in front of my mom.
Oh my God, in the house?
In the house on my birthday cake. Sacrilege. The candles. My mom's face to this day. And I think now, because I have like a kid, I'm like, if my daughter would do that, I would freak out.
Grounded.
Oh my God, I don't know how she just like freaked out inside, but she didn't say anything. But I was like, oh my God, what an asshole kid I was.
I could just picture
like, what a dick move. What young an thug. Asshole move. Yeah, I thought it was so cool. Now I'm like, what a dick.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyways, back to you playing guitar and being all punk and shit.
So that's where it started. And I was very fortunate that I went to a little high school called LRHS, Laurentian Regional High School.
Oh, you were up north?
In Lachute,
okay, so you've always been in that area.
Yeah, I was a country kid.
You're a country kid. Yeah, because you had mentioned farm earlier.
Yeah.
Like, where the fuck did she grow up?
My stepdad's farm. Okay. My parents divorced.
That's
like part every of the, 90s kid story.
I was going to say, that's part of the story.
Yeah.
You need that.
So my mom's been with my stepdad since I was 5.
Okay.
The ripe age of 5 years old. And so he had a farm. And so I just grew up on the farm, like showing the cows, doing the fair, doing the square dancing, part of the 4-H club, the whole thing.
And now you're a Verdun girl.
Yeah.
And so how is that? Like, even just thinking about life, how different life is.
Well, I wanted to escape that life.
Okay. You wanted to leave the farm?
Oh, yeah. From, I think, as soon as I finished high school, which I barely graduated, my teachers did me, my math teacher in particular, did me a
favor. Thank you, Mr. Whatever.
Yeah. Oh, fuck, what's his name?
Yeah. It's okay.
Oh, he sounded like Kermit the Frog, and he was the best. Fuck. I really would have loved to have given him a shout out, but I was going to fail miserably.
Yeah.
Like, I was already behind, a year behind in math.
Yeah.
So I think sec 4. I was in sec 4 math, but like bobo math.
Yeah.
And I was failing that, I think, with like a 40 or something.
Okay. So you were fucked.
And I remember point. I came, because I was doing fine and everything else. By fine, I mean like fine. And I remember he came up to me And he saw that I was clearly worried if I was going to graduate or not. And he's like, don't worry, I gave you a 60. And I was like, oh, God, thank you so much. Mr. Clark, thank you so much, Mr. Clark.
You saved me,
Mr. Clark. Oh, my God. Yeah, because I wouldn't have graduated, man. I was full on in music.
Were you freaking out, though, just thinking that you might not graduate? Like, what was going through your mind? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even if you can actually remember that. But
I knew I was going to move out regardless.
Okay, regardless. It was like, yeah. I'm out.
At 17, I was gone. 50 yeah. bucks in my pocket. My parents dropped me off in St. Anne de Bellevue. And I chose to go to John Abbott College only mm-hmm. because I was like, this is Hogwarts.
Yeah.
This is Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry.
It's such a beautiful campus.
Yeah, and I thought that was the big city. I had never taken a public bus before, let alone,
so you thought St. Anne de Bellevue was the big city?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
I was country.
That's you were so country that you thought the country was city.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, this is big. This is big. And,
wow, you must have, okay, so where did you go after St. Anne de Bellevue?
I went to NDG.
Okay.
Baby steps.
You're doing baby steps. Okay, now you're getting closer and closer to the city, a main city.
But I wasn't in much. This isn't a linear timeline because after I graduated high school, I moved to St. Anne de Bellevue. Oh, yeah. So while I was in high school, my music career kind of propelled at like a really young age.
What happened?
I was super fortunate. In the middle of nowhere, LRHS high school, there was a producer to the stars who was a parent to one of the kids there.
Get out of here.
His name is, and man, I was just in touch with him recently and just sent him my EP just ahead of time.
Yeah.
And just sent him like a huge thank you, like of like, dude, thank you so much for taking me under your wing at such a young age. Like things you taught me, like, thank you so much. Be proud of me because here's my EP. His name is Paul Northfield.
Okay, the name sounds familiar.
His name's Paul Northfield, and he was just like fucking a huge producer.
Yeah,
back
didn't
in
he
day.
Work with like huge, like Rush and stuff?
Rush, Black Sabbath,
okay.
David Usher, Courtney Love,
holy shit,
Dream Theater.
Okay. I didn't realize that. I for some reason Rush like rang like was the first yeah. band, but I okay, yeah. holy shit.
One of the first songs I ever recorded was on an acoustic guitar that one of the guys from Rush left behind at the studio.
Oh man!
And so I got to play on that, and I still remember the warmth of the guitar in my hands. And this is specific because I remember Paul Northfield's studio, his house in general is fucking freezing cold. I don't know what it is with old people and having a cold house.
Yeah, it's usually the opposite. Old
really?
People, man, it's on fire, the house. Like, it's
really?
Heating everywhere. I'm dying
and
when
every
I walk
old
in.
Person's house I've been in, it's freezing.
They're always wearing eight layers. Well, it's true.
They're always wearing
eight layers, though, because they're worried about the heating bill.
Yeah. So I remember always going to his studio and always being famished, always being thirsty, and always having my limbs freezing off. But I remember he had a bunch of cool guitars and a bunch of cool gear, and he gave me this Dan Electro that my ex still has today. And I recorded one of my first songs on this acoustic guitar, and it just felt so warm, and the sound was warm. And anyway, man, this guy took me under his wing, and he approached to me one of my final years of high school, because I was one of those kids that did every single variety show, every single talent show. I remember singing Rage Against the Machine, like, fuck you, I won't do what you tell me.
That must have been amazing in a high school variety show.
Being in detention after.
Yeah, I'd love to see the aftermath of playing Rage.
It was called ISS, which, what does that stand for? In school suspension.
Okay, so yeah. that's a real suspension. You have to come to school and do nothing.
Yeah. So that got me in trouble, and I was just doing nothing back then but just mushrooms and acid and weed and just playing music and just literally dreaming big. And working with him allowed me to dream big because I was like, I'm with the guy.
Yeah.
And he approached me after a year of just me doing it for me and was like, I remember he had so British, this guy. Very British. And he had these green horn-rimmed glasses.
<They're> so mental.
And he, in a gray hair and a ponytail, very Vogue, and drove a little beetle with like a sunflower inside of it, I remember. And he approached me and he's like, right, don't want to sound creepy, but I've been watching you since you were like 13.
You know, the awkwardness
I'm
of
like,
that
you're
line.
A parent here, right? You have a child here too? But essentially talent scouting me.
Yeah.
And saw how much I had grown and progressed and was like, you have something. So let's work together.
Yeah.
Let's see how I can help you.
How did it feel like being that young and someone is telling you you have something and this is a dream now that's happening? Like, how did you react to hearing a comment like that?
I had no one believe in me. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Someone telling you that. Yeah,
my first EP I had recorded, and I love my mother,
yeah.
You know, and she's proud of me now that I've seen some success. But back in the day, I think she used it as like a protective mechanism of like,
yeah. What my mom's doing? The same thing.
I used to play my guitar in my bedroom, and she used to force me to go play in my closet.
Okay.
She didn't want to hear it.
My mom didn't do that.
She didn't want to hear it. I think, you know, her having me at a really young age kind of stunted her own dreams. Mm. And so her being human, knowing that I had such a passion and knowing that it was maybe going to go somewhere, felt some sort of resentment.
It's possible.
And that's fine. I've worked past that through therapy. But my first EP was a piece of shit EP or album that I wrote literally on a tape deck in my closet.
Is that cool though? Do you have the copies of it? Like,
yeah, I burnt some CDs of it, and I have it now on Spotify and Bandcamp and stuff.
Okay, you have it on Spotify and Bandcamp. Okay,
yeah,
because I saw something like it was an old one, Vulture.
That was recorded live off a studio floor, but no, it's called the Closet Album.
Okay, I gotta check it out.
And then. It's really dark. It's really dark. Like, I had
I'm warning you. Don't worry. Like, I'll survive.
Yeah. And we could talk about that, but that was really intense. It was just recorded on, like, a tape deck or on, like, an MP3 player. And there's a lot of stuff in that.
Yeah.
There's my high school sweetheart, who I was with for 6 years, he had a really fucked up home situation. Mm. His parents were really like aggressive towards each other.
Yeah.
There's one of the songs on that album where you could hear me, my ex is telling me like, get into the bathroom, lock the door. And because his parents were getting into it again.
Holy fuck. And it's on the album?
Yeah. Like you could hear his dad being super violent and like physically violent with his mother. And
that's insane.
In the background of one of the tracks.
Oh my God. That's fucked up.
Yeah. There's just so much
on that heavy. Album.
It's a lot of like heavy. Childhood trauma, violence, verbal aggressions and stuff. And
wow.
I found a way to kind of like trickle that into like a lot of the tracks.
Yeah.
And then with my like acoustic-y lullabies on top of it, it's super ominous. Technically speaking, horribly produced. I mean, not really produced at all.
But there's kind of like, you know, those horrible productions like that Blair Witch Project scenario where I just find myself more, the worse the production, the less professional it is.
Yeah.
There's an element that I just enjoy so much
out
of it.
It's just versus, so raw.
Yeah, when I'm looking at like ads and shit and it's like all this like overproduced stuff.
Yeah.
And then like the ad is like literally sometimes just like nothing. Like there's nothing to it, or this show or this TV or whatever.
It's just
something,
a big polished,
you know, a song,
crap.
You know, you hear the person's off tune at times or,
yeah.
You know, you just like, oh, okay. Yeah. It's like, it's not AI. It's not like, yeah. not because I like AI. I love ChatGPT. I use it all the time. But like for music and stuff, I like hearing still like, or not still, but I just like hearing someone make a mistake or it's not perfect. Cause then I know that it's you. It's not like some production that you're trying to sell me something in a sense, even though you're trying to sell me something, but
yeah,
it just feels a little more real. I don't know if you feel that way now.
Yeah, it was my first kind of project and it was essentially like a diary of my youth. But to have someone of the caliber of Paul Northfield be like, we're going to do something together. He then brought me to LA for the first time to work with the Suicidal Tendencies.
Shit, yeah.
At the time, they were like hiring a new guitarist, Nico. I don't think he's still with them. But it was really cool. And he really made me feel like, okay, I do have something.
Mm-hmm.
Despite everyone being like, okay.
I'm not crazy. There is something here.
So I he really made me believe in myself because that for a long time I was just.
And how old were you at this point?
Maybe 16.
Okay. So it's kind of like that age where I find if you don't have that push from somebody, it's very easy to kind of stop.
Yeah.
It's not that everyone does, but it's you could see why someone would stop because it becomes a long time of not having anyone tell you like, hey, man, you're actually pretty good at this.
Yeah. And a lot of people will pursue whatever passions they have. Yeah. And then the reality of the world is sometimes it'll just be a hobby.
Yeah.
And you could like it all you want, but sometimes you just don't have it. Yeah. And a lot of the times you will have it, and then nothing will ever happen.
Yeah.
And you just have to come to terms with that, which I did.
Well, what did you come to terms with? Because you're still releasing music. It doesn't mean that you came to terms with it in a sense of like you stopped. You just maybe came – did you say – like maybe would you say you came to terms with the – high expectations that you're putting on yourself?
So we touched on this earlier. The difference is I do it for me now. Yeah. And I do it because I love it.
Yeah.
And in before, I used to do it because I wanted it to yield some sort of result. I wanted to impress people. I want people to ROI. Notice me. Yeah. I wanted to be, you know, famous.
Yeah.
Do it for the gram before the gram was the gram.
Yeah.
And now I just do it for me.
Yeah.
And the more I do it for me, I've realized the more genuine the work is and the more people notice anyway.
I know. Isn't it? I was having this conversation with someone recently and just saying that we know the answers. Like we know the answers.
Yeah.
But we fight this answer for so long. Because you were saying that example, you know, with the guy that made you, you know, straighten your hair and put on a garbage bag or whatever, you know, so weird, you know, but you kind of knew it was wrong and it wasn't you.
Yeah.
You know it. And you know it the whole time when he's doing your hair and all this shit. And not to bring up like a memory, but it's this idea that we have this like thing that we can't believe ourselves. Like we don't trust our instinct in those moments.
Yeah.
So that's why I find for myself too now, there's moments where sometimes when I doubt my instinct, I'm like, no, dude, this is the truth for you. Now, it's not the truth for everybody, but it's the truth for you. And are you going to not listen to it? Like, why would you not listen to yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, there comes a certain point, especially as we touched on again, age. Mm-hmm. You have to learn to trust in yourself because you've been through – at a certain point, you have to learn from your mistakes and be like, okay, we know what this result will be. So how about you just –
been here before. Yeah.
Trust yourself this time.
Yeah.
And that's what we're learning to do here in the old Jess Abram noggin. But yeah.
But now – so this EP – this thing's coming out.
Yes.
And there's like this whole road. And like, well, hold on a second before we get to the EP, because you went to California when you were young, but then you went back to California as an adult for a job though.
Yeah.
How was that experience going to California young?
It was so cool because I was 21.
Wow, perfect timing.
Yeah. And I was going to work with the suicidal tendencies. And at the same time, my music was licensed in a horror film, like a grindhouse independent horror film.
How cool is that? Like someone calls you and says, I want this song for a movie?
So I was lucky. My cousin was an independent filmmaker who also was from the South Shore of Montreal and decided that she was going to dream big, made it happen for herself, like got the green card, moved over there. And she made this super low budget. I mean, like, insanely low budget.
Like $48 budget.
Okay.
And she got $6 back.
I also acted in it.
No way.
And I was the first one to die.
How does it feel to die in a horror movie?
Feels good.
It feels good.
Yeah, it feels good because then you get to just watch as a spectator for the rest and you don't have to worry about, like, getting your lines right or whatever. I'm a horrible actress. So anyway, my music was also licensed in this movie. And lo and behold, the summer of 2012, we get word back that this grindhouse horror film has been nominated for a Hollywood Film Festival Award.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Were you buzzing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you, and you said it was your cousin?
Yeah, dude. Yeah. So, and she was freaking out as well. Not only the Hollywood Film Festival, but I found out my song was picked and nominated at the Chicago Film Fest. And I couldn't make it out to that one. But yeah, I was just like insane. And these are old ass songs that I don't even think have any I find what I'm creating now is just so much better. So to know and be validated even then.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that was so fucking cool. And so I'm like 21, I'm in LA, I'm with my producer, Paul Northfield. I'm like chilling with the suicidal tendencies and I'm on a Hollywood red carpet at like the, what's that? B word. What's that B word at some fancy hotel, okay, where this whole event is taking place. At the time, I had a huge crush on Seth Rogen. And I was walking this
red... What was it about Seth Rogen?
I don't know.
Just to pause for a second.
Funny guy.
Yeah.
Funny guy.
Okay, funny guy.
You know, the ladies love comedy. They love a guy that can make them laugh.
True.
At the time, it was Seth Rogen for me. He just really did it for me.
She's like, man, you went into a spot, you look down, you're like, I'm Seth Rogen. That laugh.
So I just remember being on the red carpet at this award, and I remember someone touching my hair. And I'm like looking behind me, and it's Amy Adams. And was touching my hair, and she was like, wow, your hair's just so beautiful. Is that natural?
Were you kind of like at first, like, who the fuck is touching my hair?
Yeah.
Or kind of like...
I don't like being touched.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Like, just it's an awkward thing. Like,
well, at first I thought it was dude.
Yeah.
Usually is. But it was Amy Adams, and I was just like in awe. And then we go into this dinner slash ceremony event thing, and Seth Rogen is the host. Yeah.
No way.
And I'm sitting...
How many times did you change your underwear?
Oh, I wasn't wearing any. That shit was dripping down my leg. 21-year-old wetness. Yeah, I was about to say
that. And this is like the guy that you find hot. Like, you literally...
That shit's a river.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, you must have been freaking out. Like, where the... How did this girl from a fucking farm... Because I'm hearing the story, and I'm like, how the fuck did this girl from the Laurentians... Not in a bad way, but, like, she's, like, living at a certain point, like... I'm sure this was kind of like the dream, I guess, at that point.
Yeah. We've all had little moments in our life where you're like, oh, my God, I made it. This is it. Yeah. And then here I am.
Thanks. Wow.
You didn't let me finish.
Here I am.
But then I'm going to leave today and be like.
I want you to edit this part. This you have to like, we're going to make an ad out of this one. And then here I am.
Rock me like a hurricane. Yeah, no, but that was one of those moments. And then I remember they had this extravagant dinner, and then lo and behold, it was a room filled with like circular tables.
Okay.
And the table across from mine was Quentin Tarantino's.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I hate you right now.
It was crazy. And then my God. Seth Rogen walked off the stage, and we were at a table right beside the carpet that leads out through the front doors. And I remember I conveniently got up.
Just randomly. You happened to do the rub.
I'm like shaking remembering this. I like got up because I was like, okay, he's coming. Like I'm going to position myself where he has to literally like excuse himself to get by me.
You're like a fucking linebacker trying to block him.
So I'm just like taking up as much room as possible, trying to like, okay, I'm going to pull out my chair and try and conveniently look as if I'm looking for something. And then he had to be like, oh, excuse me. Definitely. And I'm like, oh my God, hey, huge fan. He's like, hey, I'm about to go outside and smoke the spliff. Like, want to join?
No way.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. I'm not believing this anymore.
That's crazy.
All of this, no.
And I said no because I was so nervous.
You said no to smoking a J with Seth Rogen, the guy that you found super
hot. My cousin was freaking out. She's like, go.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I'll see you out there or whatever. And then I just never went. I went to the bathroom and thought I was going to like puke and have diarrhea. And so I just never went.
So you...
But I spoke to him.
That's amazing.
I spoke to him and he kind of bumped into me and grazed my thigh.
I'm just saying it happened. Wow.
So, yeah, super fun. And so all of that was happening at 21. And then I got back home.
Why? How come you had to come back home? Just like visa shit or was
no,
it like...
No, we were just there for the festival.
Oh, okay.
We were just there for the festival and conveniently my producer, Paul, was going to be there with the band and wanted to introduce me and see if we could make anything happen and all that stuff. Of course, nothing really happens of it, but it was all really, really cool. And we were nominated for the award, but we didn't win the award. Les Misérables with Anne Hathaway, obviously, won the award.
What evs, man.
Then I came back to Montreal and worked at a Subway sandwich place.
I was just about to ask you.
Yeah.
How was the transition when you got back?
Really shitty.
Man, I'm not going to say this in a shitty way, but fuck, it must be tough to come back home.
Yeah, I got a job on Sherbrooke Street in DeCary in NDG at the Subway station right there and was selling hash and selling sandwiches.
At least it was hash.
It was a nice little hash business that had going on there. Yeah. I'd like tuck the hash underneath the food trays.
You're like, you want a 12-inch or 6-inch? And then you wink. You know, like, okay.
But it was really the payment for the hash. It was
amazing.
Yeah. Started smoking cigarettes.
Everything went downhill. Once I went to Subway, life was...
Yeah, but it was really cool. And even before this whole Hollywood thing happened, I told you I left home at 17. And at 19, I left Canada for the first time by myself because I had gotten this gig with this German boy band. And they invited me.
This is amazing. I swear to God, I don't think I could have put this shit. I can't make this shit up. You're talking about like potentially smoking weed with Seth Rogen and nominated for movies. I'm blanking Paul. What's his last name again?
Northfield,
like guys that worked with like Rush and a bunch of all these bands, a hash dealer at Subway. And now you are, in what, a boy band from Germany?
At 19, I left home
and this is all by 20. This is amazing.
Yeah. Before 20, I told you I went to John Abbott College. John Abbott College is a huge hub for, oh my God, I was going to say extraterrestrial students.
There's an interesting registration program at John Abbott College right now.
For a lot of students abroad and a lot of Germans.
Extraterrestrials, also known.
Extraterrestrial students. So I met this German boy and he was really into like EDM and like the electronic music scene. And we became really good friends. He went back to Germany. We stayed pen pals. His band in Germany got famous.
They always do. There's something like, about Germany that, like, if it's anything a bit off and it's from Berlin, it's on fire.
Like, what the hell? So I remember teaching this guy guitar chords, like, on the field, like, and at John Abbott being like, okay, this is a C, this is a G. You're great.
He's never going to make it.
Yeah. And then he goes back to Germany. His band called Cesar,
always intense.
Z-A-R-R. I don't think they're a thing anymore. But they got like their moment of fame.
Yeah.
And they were on like this whole European tour and they were playing the Berlin Melt Festival and everything. And he's like, Jess, I want you to be like our backing vocals. I want to do some stuff with you. Join me on tour. And he flies
Join me on the tour.
Yeah, he flew me out.
What the fuck is going on over here?
Like I had no one do anything for me at that point. Yeah. I had never left my hometown besides, I thought I was in the big city and it was John Abbott.
Yeah.
Like I was in San Diego. You must have
buzzed when you went to Berlin.
So I was like leaving for the first time home and it was an all paid expense trip. Like their tour, man, everything was paid for.
Wow.
They're just having me along for the ride.
So how long were you on tour with them?
I was there for like a month.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. So at least a good like 30 days of like that experience. It's a good 30 day experience.
I did so many festivals, but the one that really stood out was the Berlin Melt Festival where I think we were with Plants and Animals, like all these bands that I like really enjoy now that I actually had no idea who the fuck they were at the time. I'm sure
it's always like that.
I was just back there with a bunch of, you know, scrawny musicians, just again pinching myself, like, what am I doing here? Oh my God, they probably think I'm like,
but now are you
sleeping
thinking
with the band or something? Some Band-Aid, like Penny Lane situation.
What a good movie, by the way.
Love it.
I love that. Almost Famous is such a good movie. Yeah. Like, I could watch that movie every year, like once a year, and I could just watch and enjoy it.
It's genius.
But are you thinking like at this point, I'm fucking 21 years old or whatever it is, all this is happening, it's all going exactly as planned. Mm-hmm. Like, what are your thoughts in like, because did you even, like you know, you had vision making it big, you know, everyone does, but no one can verbalize what big is or it is. Mm-hmm. And now you're doing all these things, which is kind of it.
Yeah.
In a sense, like in a sense, like most people would be thinking you've made it. And so now like you're going on this German tour and then it ends 30 days later. Is there another thing that kind of continued that process that made you believe to, I got to keep going?
I mean, I've always from a very young age was very stubborn about this, about who I am and what I'm going to do with my life. Mm-hmm. So I could have done anything. I could have really done anything. And I, you know, but there's always just always been one road for me. Mm-hmm. And it's, the hardest road to take.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's all I want to do with my life. I can't do anything else. I'll fucking, okay, I don't want to sound dramatic or anything. Fucking kill
it was getting to the drama. I was like,
I can't. I don't want to die miserable. I'm miserable enough as it is doing what I love.
That's a great line though, honestly. But it's a great fucking... But it's such a battle, though. It is like, and I feel you because I know that there's half of me that does things I don't want to do, but I have to do those to do the things I want to do.
Of course.
And I feel like with age, that's kind of like the balance of the two, where without one, the other one is not going to be as enjoyable because then it becomes super stressful.
Yeah.
That it has to work and I'm fucked. But in one way, I feel like I'm kind of cheating myself of it because I'm only half there.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. Do you have this like constant back and forth about that? Or is it
I had a quarter life crisis, I think, nearing the pandemic at around 20. Like, I knew the company was in over their head with these projects, and we were super lucky we got the partnerships that we did and the funding that we did in California. Like, I got to work with the LA Lakers and like interview them, and it was so crazy. Got to work with the LA Comedy Store and the Laugh Factory and of like my favorite comics in the world, who I'm still in touch with today. What the fuck? And I knew it was all going to come crashing down, as all of these great things in my life always have. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always too good to be true. And so when it finally did come crashing down, like, I told myself, like, okay, I put way too much pressure on myself to make this be the thing that will propel me for the rest of my life. When we know, Jess, it never is, and it always comes crashing down. And so, not necessarily to like have a backup plan, but to just not put so much fucking pressure on myself that it's gonna be okay regardless. If it works out, wow, it works out. If it doesn't work out, you kind of knew it wasn't gonna work out.
Well, you see, like, it's funny because
not to be like a pessimist,
but I was about to say that. Why look at it from? And I'm with you on everything you just said. And then that last line, I was like, why would you want to say, but you knew it wouldn't work out? Like I'm not questioning you, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it could be like, why is it not, I still had fun doing it. You know, like it's, I know. It's natural.
It's self-programming.
It's self-programming. I have the same feeling too. And that's why when I hear someone say it, I'm like, oh man, don't look at it that way. But then I hear myself saying the exact same line. So when it's someone else, it's always great advice you can give. But then with yourself, you kind of revert back to that.
It's just the story I've told myself since forever, you know? So it's hard to deprogram yourself from like, oh, of course this is happening to you. Of course you didn't get the part. Of course you didn't make it all the way through on La Voix. Of course, of course you're not famous. Of course you're not good enough. And then that way, if I set myself up for disappointment, when it eventually or evidently doesn't happen, I'll be like, okay.
Told you. I kind of knew it.
I can't be upset about this. In the back of my head, I already knew it wasn't going to happen.
Have you ever tried not?
Exactly. So this is what I'm trying to do now. Instead of setting myself up for failure and putting that negative energy into the universe, I'm trying to really reverse that.
It's hard.
Because, like, I don't know, my whole algorithm on Instagram and TikTok now is like, ooh, manifestation and positive energy. And I'm like, and they swear by it. They're like, if you put good juju out into the world, it will come back to you. And I'm like, I really want this for me.
Yeah.
But then I feel like mixed in with my good energy, positivity vibes, there's like desperateness. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the universe can sense my disparity. This bitch wants this way too bad. Yeah,
she wants to be happy so much that I'm going to fuck that up. You know? But I hear you. Because I find, you know, like, even when you see all the stuff of like, be happy and all that stuff, I get it. And there's an element that I do buy in it a lot more than I used to.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like feel like sometimes the overkill of it like just makes you say, oh, stop giving me another video of how to better myself. Like, sometimes I'm just going to feel like shit and it's okay.
Yes.
I just like, I kind of came up with, this is my like model now.
Ooh, do tell.
Okay. I'm into the secret life of Stefano.
Ooh.
Just try to minimize the amount of days I feel like shit.
Yeah.
Like, literally that's it. So if I see something is bothering me now, like, I kind of made this deal with myself.
Okay.
This is the deal that I make, is that I'm allowed to feel like shit about this topic for like up to 7 days. But once it hits 7 days, you have to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
Like physically, like, so if let's say something is really bothering me, I don't know, it's day seven, just go for a fucking really long run. Like, it doesn't have to be something to solve that problem, but just do something that you know makes you feel good. And that, ever since I kind of had that model kind of in place, I feel like I'm able to just jump out of that funk faster. Yeah,
you need to do like a, like, I wish there was some sort of like tapping code on my body to be like brain rewired, like reposition yourself, pivot.
Yeah, pivot.
Yeah.
But it's like, but I feel like the reason why is because then those things like seep into all your other stuff. And then all of a sudden you don't want to write a song anymore.
Yeah.
Or you don't feel like it's seeing your boyfriend. Or
yeah,
you don't
you're right. It really seeps into everything.
And then it seeps into everything else. So I know that I have like a timeline internally that then it gets really hard to get rid of that feeling. Mm-hmm. So it's like I need to kill it as fast. Not kill the feeling, but just move something differently to just grab some attention and put my focus on something else. I could realize maybe it's not so bad.
Because it'll snowball. Oh, and if you have anxiety like I do, like a lot of people do, it'll become like an anxious cycle.
Exponential.
And then it becomes your whole world.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't want that.
No.
So, yeah.
But okay. So I know we kind of went through all kinds of stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said you picked up a guitar. Well, just pretend as though like we just finished. You picked up a guitar and you dusted stuff off it.
Oh, yes. Good callback. Wow. I remember that day. I remember it was the end of my relationship, okay? I remember I was feeling some kind of way and I was like sexting with people on the internet.
You were on that road.
Yeah.
It's a good road though.
Whatever. It was.
For that period, it's a good road. You need it. Okay.
Cool. I just needed the validation.
Yes.
And wrote a few songs, and I was really just like in my jam room, man. If you could just see the layout of my apartment right now, because my ex at the time was playing Overwatch on the PlayStation. That's all he did, really. And
I love the little sneak in mine, and that's all he did, really.
And I was in the next room just trying to make use of myself again, because I again had just come off this huge high of being in California and working with the Lakers to then losing my job. I was on EI in a cold jam room that has not been used in 2 years with a guitar that probably is in as big of a depression as I was. So we needed some mutual love in there. And so I tried to make that happen. And, you know, I built these little songs and these little stories. And what happened after that? Yeah, finally broke up with my ex, and 3 weeks after the breakup, moved to the Plateau and started my new venture in the Plateau on Rivard, right next to you.
Not too far.
And was there for like a good 3.5 years, and finally was in the studio at that time, like putting these songs down, laying them down, structuring them. And that was really, really cool. Played a few shows, got back together with my band from Toronto, and it was really cool. Did a few festivals, played Jazz Fest 1 year. That was really cool. And I just got my groove back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really just got my groove back. And then I told myself, like, okay, I got to go back to music. I got to go back to music. Like, yeah, it's really cool that there was a certain time in my life where I thought all I could ever do was music. And if it wasn't going to make it as that, I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. Like, I wasn't really good at a lot of things. Yeah. Like,
no,
I wasn't good at a lot of things. But I was really good at this one thing.
Yeah.
And I had validation from that. And so
for so long, you had
really
validation,
fucking
too.
Depressing when you're like, fuck, I'm not going to make it. And so I really found that, I had done, like I said, like I found other ways to entertain myself, and I found other things that I was good at.
Yeah.
And so I knew at that point coming out of the pandemic that music wasn't going to be the end all be all of my life. And there was definitely more to live for. And at that point I had like my chosen family. Like I had built really close friendships, friends of mine who have been my friends for over 10, 15 years now, really backing me up, because I don't go back home much. I see my family maybe once, twice a year.
Yeah.
And so that's how the EP really got together. And
well, that's amazing. That's it.
I found myself maybe a year and a half ago. Again, I had worked in cinema. I've done so many fucking jobs. I was working. I had a burnout working on this huge Disney movie called The Naughty Nine. I was working like insane hours as a set PA. If any of you guys know what a set PA is, you know it's just brutal. It's like 4 a.m. call times and you're working like 16, 17 hour days sometimes.
Man, movies sound fun till you actually hear what's behind the movies. Like, and people would tell me that too. Oh, you like you do commercials and shit? Like, yeah.
Commercials are fine.
Yeah, but they still take like 7 hours.
Yeah, more.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's more. it's a 30-second ad and it takes like 7 to 10. It's a full day of like nonstop set and all this shit. So a movie, I can't even imagine if you're actually part of it and not an extra.
They're usually like 3-4 month projects.
Yeah. Intense, every day.
Yeah, and being a part of the film crew, it's thankfully you're paid well if you're lucky.
Yeah.
And you're unionized, which I am. But if you're a PA, being like a PA PA, like a daily PA, is absolute horse trash. Horse trash?
I don't know. I never knew that there was trash from a horse.
But I was a set PA, so okay. I was managing.
So a what team. Kind of trash would you call that?
I mean, I still have to have like a 4 a.m. call time and we're done so at like 7 p.m. Some sort of trash, it's but horrible. Not horse trash. But at least I get to delegate tasks. Two people. Like, you change the garbage. You, the actor wants a mocha frappuccino oat with, you know.
You actually go run the duty. Like, you can, in a sense, you have.
I can delegate.
You can delegate.
I can tell my minions to go do all of these things. And I get to, like, sit there. And then as a set PA, you're also the one that's, like, quiet on set.
Okay.
Rolling. You hear the lights in the background?
I would love it if somebody would fuck around. You're a loser.
Yeah, because everyone has walkies, so you can talk trash so much. I would
be talking trash. I'd be such. They'd fire me.
But you have to be careful on which channel you're on.
Yeah, exactly. I know walkie. I would fuck up on the wrong channel. Tell someone, the director, to like kiss my ass or something.
Yeah. Like usually the directors are on what, channel 3 or something. Like not the PAs, the assistant directors and all the script writer and all those people, script supervisors and stuff. Yeah, there was one time where I was delegating, like, I told you to switch off the light. We can hear the buzzing of the light. And I was on channel 3.
No.
All the producers were able to hear.
Did they laugh after that?
Channel 5, Jess.
Channel 5.
Oh, sorry.
They're like, oh, fuck.
Anyways, whatever. I was on a burnout from that. And this was just a couple years ago. And I was on LinkedIn and I saw that this co-working space was looking for, like, I don't know. I just wanted something really easy. For the first time in my fucking life, I was like, I want a 9-to-5. I think I want a day job.
You need a checkout almost.
I think I want a day job. Because I had been like entrepreneurial, just gigging. Yeah. Just doing
a salary.
Gigs.
I just need a salary right now.
Yeah. I needed stability. I'm like, okay, bitch, you're in your 30s. You don't have a savings account. You've been living life. I mean, traveled the fucking world.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like,
so many stories under my belt. Like, I lived a crazy life, and I'm just 32. But I have, like, I don't have money. I don't have money at all. And know how to spend whatever money I did have. So, yeah, I needed a job. And so this co-working space, they were looking for, like, a receptionist.
Yeah.
And I was their last interview. And already I'm like, they're not going to fucking hire me, you know. I don't have experience. I've never been a receptionist before. And they called me back and they're like, we want you.
You're the one.
You could learn reception stuff, but we want someone who's more than a receptionist. Yeah. We want someone to be the face of the space. Yeah. And they had just started the co-working space. They were barely a year in.
Which one is it?
On Wellington Street.
Okay, this is on Wellington. Okay.
Yeah. Called Spatial. It's the only one of its kind. It's some real estate company. They own a bunch of residential and commercial buildings. They wanted to just convert one into a co-working. And they're like, you can do the bare minimum and get paid the minimum salary we're willing to offer you, or you can just run with this and make this your home. Turn it into whatever you want.
Oh, that's pretty cool. In one way, it's kind of like you have an opportunity.
Yeah. So I at first was like, you know, getting my bearings on how to be a receptionist. And then I really got the hang of it and turned the space into an event space, comedy club. Like, we have really cool members. And I went from like administrative whatever to like operations manager of the building.
Yeah. But now, okay. So now you have this like other side of this like 9-to-5 side.
And I never thought in my life that I would be like a senior or manager of anything.
Yeah.
Anything in my life. I never thought. I thought the best I could do was make a bomb ass sandwich at Subway's.
And, like, so how do you feel about yourself? Like, do you feel Like, oh, I'm not gonna direct the question. How do you feel about this?
I never thought I'd be good at something other than the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. Like, I always thought I was a show pony or like a stage monkey or whatever you want to call it, like a fucking circus freak. And I'm okay with that because I thought that's all I was good at, mm-hmm. is just like turning it on and then going back home and just fucking bawling my eyes out. Because that's what giving that much energy does to you. Drains you. You know, I love using my battery in public spaces and being on stage and either being in front of the camera or behind the camera or, you know, being on stage with my giant acoustic guitar that's too big for my body. I really love that.
Yeah.
And I didn't think I could do anything else, but it really made me, because I've been fired, man, from so many jobs.
He's fucking selling hash at Subway, of course.
I've been fired from so many jobs. I've been in the gaming industry. I've been a gaming tester. I've been fired from so many jobs. I was like, cool, that's fine because I'm not good at these jobs and I don't want to be good at these jobs. This is not what I want to do with my life. But I found a cool niche with this co-working space where I can turn that space into whatever I want. And I'm at a stage in my life where I want to be able to offer really cool services to artists. Like, I want to have a space that fuels creative energy, a space that I didn't have when I was younger.
Don't you feel that now, like, I was obsessed with music, same thing. Like, if I wasn't on stage, there's no reason to be in music.
Yeah.
Like, there was no negotiations. I didn't want to I didn't even care about any other position in the concept of music outside of being the guitarist in a rock band that made it on tour. Like, this was what
that
I wanted.
That defines you.
That is who I am.
Yeah.
And when that didn't happen, it's like, I don't know anything anymore. I am a lost case. I'm going to always just kind of in some way or another not enjoy life. Like, it was kind of like, I'm just always going to feel like I never made it. And I'm always going to be that guy that is, you know, and it's that weird feeling. Like, but then I ended up walking, same thing like you. It was like, I walked into, I remember the media world and all this stuff. And it allowed me to kind of have this persona. Like, I'm still on stage. Like, you get the same feeling of being on stage.
It triggers the same skill sets and the same energy.
And creating ideas. And we would talk in we'd be in a boardroom, which I always thought was the worst thing in the world. And we'd be talking about these fucking cool ideas for these ads and thinking of all these different concepts. And then we'd be on set to produce these ads. And I just said, wait a minute. Like, I feel like, did I lie to myself that you can't?
Yeah,
like
you
it's
did.
Like it's only this that could trigger that feeling. Mm-hmm. And then once I kind of said, no, dude, like it's not just music. You can actually trigger these feelings in so many outlets that you were actually a bit like blind to reality in one sense, which is great because sometimes you need that to drive you. And then at a certain point, it becomes like a really like bad drive. And you're like, how do I get off this road?
Yeah.
Like, it's really bad.
I
got to get off this train. I got to get off this fucking road. And then when I started finding, like, those things, it was like, holy shit. Like this is one of them. Like, this is an avenue for me that I always enjoy, like, good conversation. And, you know, and whatever. And why not start a podcast and do it, you know? And then so it's like this co-working space is like, it's allowing you, it seems like it, to be you.
Yeah.
At a place that is, like, and people don't, I don't think companies realize that if you would actually do that more, you would have people that would love to come to work. Like you really like it, but sometimes you even love it.
Yeah.
To the point where it's helping like this internal endorphin that if you're creative, you need it. You need to.
Yeah.
You need it out of your body. You cannot keep it there because it doesn't like doesn't know how to control itself almost.
No. Yeah, I really love that they felt comfortable to give me like carte blanche and just give me the reins.
Yeah.
I don't know why they did to this day. They could have hired someone with a professional resume, you know, that could do the work needed. But I'm really learning that anyone can be, I mean, anyone can do it.
Well, it's always, everything's like that. Like,
I think they wanted someone who could
bring something different to the table, right?
Bring the space alive.
But now in contrast to the music, right? Because you have this thing that's like allowing you to kind of have your own world in one sense. And then you're still doing the music at the same time.
Yeah.
This record's being released or already released, January 26th.
Mm-hmm.
What are you kind of looking forward to when it comes to the music side of though? Like, well, not looking forward to an expectation wise, but like, do you have any plans already in motion for this as some kind of like a next step?
Yeah, so I'll probably Once the EP is out, the single is already out. Stream it on all digital platforms. Undertones.
Yeah, I was gonna say the title. I forgot. I remember Undertones, but the album is called something else though.
Diary of a Flame.
There's a hands on fire there.
Man, I had a friend of mine. We're both like dairy freaks. You know, bitches love cheese.
Bitches love cheese.
It's a thing. It really is. I don't know what it is. Super highly addictive. And my friend got back to me and she thought that the album name was Dairy of a Flame.
She's like, it makes sense.
Oh, man. I hope people don't read it as such, but the words are very marketing, close.
Yeah, like, fuck, did I just make a mistake?
I mean, if more memes come out making fun of it, that's, you know, no publicity is bad publicity. But so I'll be probably doing an album launch in March.
Nice.
And I've already got, you know, the press and the marketing and the email list already. And I know as far as expectations, I've learned now to not have many.
Yeah.
And so I'm not being a pessimist, but I'm being a realist. Like, I'm doing this for me.
Yeah.
I think that this is some of the best music I've ever done. I'm really happy, obviously, with the collaborations I've done with Stephen Voice. We collaborate quite frequently together, yeah. And I really love the stuff that's come out. But it's gotten to the point that I'm looking at my Spotify, like, top, you know, your top songs that show up. It's all me and Stephen Voice. And so I think it's due time that I have my next project come out. And I'm just super stoked about it. All of them are really meaningful. They came at a really kind of pivotal point in my life. You know, the ending of a 10-year relationship is just like a lot for anybody, but for also sure. The end of like a crazy career, the start of a new one. It was all just like, this project is really the eye of the tornado.
That's
like
awesome.
Everything was kind of just going on around it, and I was able somehow to center myself within it all, the chaos of it all. And this is the fruit of that. And so I'm really excited for people to hear it and let me know what they think. Jordan Barilero, my really good friend Jordan, who we used to play music together back in the Abbott days. He was in a band called Phenomenon, but now he's a really good sound engineer.
Okay.
He's the one who mixed this project. I would have only trusted him with this as he knows my voice probably better than I do. And Freck Shop, Dave mastered the project, and I'm just so happy with it.
Yeah.
I'm really stoked about it.
I could see it. You went into like La La Land talking about it, which is fucking... You could always tell when someone's passionate about a project, the way they speak about it, it says a lot. I don't even need to hear the album. I could tell that you really put time and effort into it, because the way someone talks about it is just obvious. And like, hopefully people can feel... I felt it like here in the room. Hopefully, if somebody's watching, you know, or listening, they can feel like that there is a lot of like passion that went into this, and just like time and effort. Like it felt real, you know.
It was very real. I mean, it's not again. It's like a folk indie alternative album.
It doesn't matter.
It's like, not for everybody, but if you're into that genre, you're gonna love this.
You know, I find, I know we're coming to the end of it, but you know, when you talk genres, right?
Yeah.
I've always been a person like I love a ton of genres.
Same.
The only thing I don't like is when it sounds fake.
Same.
So
overly produced.
Yeah, overly produced. But even like something that you could see that someone is really passionate about and it sounds fake, I'm okay with that because they're really passionate about. Like, I'm not a fan of the genre, but I'm actually enjoy something that people just...
If it's good, it's good.
And good is like that subjective thing, but I like seeing someone that really thinks this is their best.
Yeah.
How could you not appreciate that?
Same.
Like, that to me is what I like about
any type of artist. I'm of the same ilk. I do believe that as well.
So look, I just want to say, like, honestly, I know it took like multiple attempts to make this happen.
No,
but
sorry,
I'm so happy. I'm so happy it happened. Like, I had a great fucking time, honestly. I had a
me
really
too.
Good time.
Me too. Man, you're a really good conversationalist.
I guess I would. That sounds like a great word. I'll leverage that.
Yeah, you're absolutely fantastic. If you guys haven't sat down with Steph yet, if you're a creative or an entrepreneur, or I don't know what kind of people you like to interview on this thing, but
people that are passionate about what they
you're
do.
You're in for a treat.
You're in. Good. Thank you. I honestly really appreciate it. For everyone like that's watching or listening, check out the new album. the EP. So what would you suggest they find, like profile? Like, you want them to go to Instagram? Do you want them to go to Spotify? Like, is there certain places you want to direct anybody?
Actually, that's a great point. I last year lost my main account, man.
What happened?
Sucked.
I know we're getting to the end, but what happened here?
On my birthday.
No.
Yeah, they pulled it on my 31st birthday. I don't know. I know of a lot of people who have lost their account because of that. I don't know what the hell it was, but they – and it's still active. Yeah. That's what's weird.
Okay. I thought I was going crazy because I went on your account.
Yeah.
And then I see like lost my account, and then I see the other account, and then I go onto it and I'm like, it's here. Why? I'm just like, you found it.
Yeah. So my account is still active.
Okay.
At Jess Abrin. I can't. For the life of me, log in. I can't have access to the account. It hasn't been hacked, not that I know of. Otherwise, you'd
know. Have you contacted Meta?
I've contacted everyone. Facebook, Meta, customer. I finally found customer support where I was able to talk to a real person. And over 5 calls and 5 attempts, every single time I've had the people say, oh, this is a technical issue and not... customer support issue, and we don't have tech support.
Okay, that fucking sucks.
Bullshit. So that like fucking ruined me for a while because I was getting a bunch of I had like brand partnerships and stuff.
Yeah, I was about to say that because I'm sure because it's a pretty like big account. Like,
I was getting
when I got onto it, I'm like, why would she switch out? So I was like, there's got to be a story. Don't fucking talk to me about this thing.
Definitely wasn't my choice.
Yeah. So
but Instagram.
So we got to get everyone to come on this new.
So it would be really cool if through and another cool talk about like. The blimp in the lifeline thing there, but like lost my account, right? 30,000 followers, a lot of passive income and brand partnerships and stuff gone on my birthday. And then start a new account. Oh. And then within a few months of starting my new account, Instagram decided to verify me. And then because I only have like 1,000 followers, I got DMs of like, oh, you bought your Meta verified. Then I'm like, no, if you know me, you know I would never.
Yeah.
But what's the point?
Yeah, but what a crazy, like, wow. I think what burns it the most is, like, the fucking birthday. Like, on the birthday. Yeah. Look, I'm sorry. That sucks. I'm really sorry about that.
Yeah, it sucks. So it would be really cool if...
So we got to get you back on your account, like, this new account.
Yeah.
Everybody, go there.
Yeah, I don't care about my old account anymore. Yeah. Like, I want to... If I could delete it now, I would. So that people don't get confused.
Yeah.
Because now it's Jess.Abrin with the verified check now. So you can hopefully tell the difference. I just wish the other one didn't exist anymore because it's getting a lot of like misdirected traffic and it's so annoying. But yeah, so for anything, any projects that are coming out, please go through my new Instagram account, the verified one at Jess.Abrin. And that would be great. The EP will be called Diary, Not Dairy, of a Flame. That'll be out in February. And please be on the lookout for all my launch party and all the new stuff that's going on in my life.
Cool. And let me know. I'll repost. I do that with all the guests too. Like if they have something, like honestly, send it over. Even though like we're doing this episode, doesn't mean... that it stops and I don't give a shit either. You know what I mean? It's like, send it over. I want people to know, especially with the guests that come on. So
very cool.
Thank you so
much.
Love
what you're doing.
Thanks,
Steph. Yeah.
That's it.
We're done. Sweet.
Awesome.
Wow. That was cool.
Hey, thanks for checking out the show. It's been awesome working on this project. And if you like it, tell a friend. And if you want to support the show, you can by 1, subscribing and liking our YouTube channel at the DMW Podcast. 2, you can go to our website and sign up to our mailing list at thedmwpodcast.com. And 3, you can follow us on Instagram at the DMW Podcast. Thanks again for all of your support. My name is Steph, and this is the Dead Man Walking Podcast.